The Narathon Committee has asked Michelle to share her experience, strength, and hope with us.
My name is Michelle. I'm a recovering addict. And I'm glad to be breathing finally. You tell me if you can't hear me in the back. I'm loud as it is, so I don't need too much help. So breathing is good. So happy Thanksgiving, everybody, family. It's good for me. It always seems like this is my celebration, my party. I got clean November 21 of 87, 19 years ago in 2 days. So this is my party. I really want to talk about how I've found gratitude through all of the past and into my clean time and into my present. Gratitude plays a big part in my day, and it has taken on a whole new meaning for my life. I'm just going to kind of go through my addiction. We all know what addiction looks like. We did it. We're here. I was born in Dallas, Texas, and today I got a lot of attention for that, so it's good. That was very fun. I perceived a lot of trauma in my world early, and without all those details, what I did with that is I internalized them and made me wrong. And whatever happened outside of me, I took it on that it was about me. Not a new story either. So moving through my childhood looked like something switched at about 6 years old. Something switched. I remember laughing. I remember playing. I remember doing things like that before then, and then it stopped. I changed my mind, basically, is what I did. I didn't do it consciously, but I changed my mind. And so at six, I started watching everybody outside of me, and I started watching how I was unlike them, and I was watching how you were better than me and how you did it different, and how I didn't measure up, and that covers it. Now we're going to talk about when I got clean, though. I just didn't measure up. I wasn't taught to measure up. I wasn't taught that who I was enough. I wasn't taught that I was... that my talent is. I don't have to try to claim a talent. I am talented in whatever ways I am. I didn't know that there was a spiritual side of life. I had no idea about a peace and a tranquility, and I had no upbringing toward emotional well-being. Everything was push and shove and get and take and... survival. My father was shot by his father when I was two, and my mother immediately had to survive. And my sister and I were both small, and I remember my sister taking more care of me than my mother. I don't remember my mother ever in the house where I was raised. I don't remember her presence in that house. And so that sets up a whole strange dynamic for a kid. We made a significant move to Carmel, California when I was six. And it's the first time I'd ever really seen my mother daily. And I saw her as a beautiful woman, and I was enamored with her. We lived in the most beautiful part of the country I think I still have seen. And I was allowed to walk to the beach every day. You know, it was four blocks down to the Carmel cul-de-sac on the beach. That's pretty fantastic as a 6 and 7 year old. At 8 years old, she remarried, and I Not only was the switch already turned off, I became defiant. And then at 11, we moved back to Texas, and I had a new brother. And at 11, I shot dope, had sex, ran away, was wanted, was put in juvenile detention, and there were decisions being made about me at 11 that are kind of abnormal. So from 11 to 18, I ran. I practiced active addiction. I stole. I did all of what we do, and I believed in it. It was what I believed in. I believed in getting and finding ways and means to get more. And it worked. In my recovery, I heard this share about if what we were doing wasn't working to keep us alive, we wouldn't have done it. And I firmly believe that my active addiction got me to these steps, really. I got here. I didn't die. You know, at 13, I was suicidal. I tried 3 times to kill myself. It was kind of not working. What I was doing wasn't working as a whole. So all that time until I was 18, I was in a commune and, you know, just fun stuff when you're ripping and roaring and thinking something's missing. At 18, I overdosed for the second time, and I ended up getting married. And those things sound funny. They do go together for my story, though. they just do. That's how it happened, and that's what worked for me. I spent the next, whatever, that was in 80. I spent the next 6 years pretending and utilizing all of the things I had seen in my upbringing to try to pretend that things were working. But nothing was working because nothing was working then. It never worked for them, and it wasn't going to work for me, but I was still doing it. I call it the setting the table era. I used my cloth napkins today, actually. I'm not pretending life. Things really work. In 1986, I had figured out that I was miserable. What happened in 1980 is I was shooting dope and getting high and ODing, and people were hating me, and I was pretty miserable. And getting married looked like the right thing to do, and I did it. And the commitment was, it's so funny, the commitment was not to do white drugs. I mean, you know, other things. It had nothing to do about companionship or, you know, whatever. It was to not do white drugs, so I didn't. I could handle that because I had all the others. I had the liquid drugs. I had the leafy drugs. I had all the other stuff, so it was fine. In 1986, I was so miserable. Without those white drugs, I weighed 380 pounds, and I couldn't cope with life between my ears. So I drank more, smoked more, ate more, lied more, hid more. And by then I had 2 children, and they were becoming more. And it was all kind of finding its way in on me. I became homicidal towards this person that had so nicely rescued me. And on January 13th of 86, I left. And I left my kids, and I left that house, and I didn't go back. And I proceeded to hit a bottom. And it was the best bottom I've ever had. It was terrific. It worked for me. It's the last one of that sort that I've needed to go to. I lived in downtown Dallas in the New Arts District. I live in a penthouse in the, you know, back of a warehouse up on the 3rd floor. And it was dark. and it was wrong and bad and indifferent, and I was intolerant. I set up bands and struck bands every night, so their hours are, whatever, 7 p.m. to 4 a.m., and that worked for my drug addiction. It really facilitated me getting into the bottom that I had to go to. I was well confused. I didn't know what to do different. I'd never heard of anything different to do except behave, and I couldn't behave. I was far beyond that capacity. So I moved to North Dallas because I was going to be good. And I got a job at a hotel, and I wore a green dress, and it didn't work very well. I was a drug addict. I didn't look really right in a housekeeping green dress. But I pretended again that it was going to work, and I rented this apartment next door to the hotel on hot checks, and I used other people's names for the utilities, and I was home. It was good. And this woman at the hotel gave me this car and a cat and a little stereo and a square table and a cake plate. Why I remember that from 19 years ago. And her giving that stuff to me really spoke to me. I couldn't figure it out, really. Her name was Precious. And it really impressed me that somebody had given me something, a few things. And then this guy that I was seeing tried to kill me 3 times, and that kind of didn't make sense either. And I'd go to work. I remember going up in the hotel rooms and being so good at my job. I was good at my job because I was wired, because I was just a mess cleaning for hours. And it was really odd how satisfying that was. It's like you're a hotel maid. It was fine for me though at the time. I just started having so many questions that I could not sit with the answers that I had. I needed some new answers. I was really getting pretty tired of this trying to behave, and it's still not working for the confusion and just harm that was going on inside me. And there was a night audit girl that worked at the front desk, and she was always so obnoxiously happy. I hated that shit. It's like, ugh. You know, like mornings. It's like, shut up. Her name's Cindy. And after my last OD, she took me to my first meeting with Narcotics Anonymous at 8 p.m. And, it's always a question how other people love us till we can love ourselves. And I remember how obnoxiously happy she was, and she loved me. That's what was happening, is she could see through me to my being, through my addiction, through my misbehavior and my green dress, and she could see the person that I am, and I didn't identify that for a long time. That meeting of Narcotics Anonymous that I went to was at Yale Street in Dallas, and very significantly, there were steps all the way up to that facility, through the glass door, up the steps into the meeting room, and that made sense to me. It seemed like it was right. I didn't want to leave when I got, after that meeting was over. The meeting was a candlelight meeting, and they were all bikers up there. I felt home with the biker part. I felt weird about the pot pie candle holders. And they all used like addict cuss words. There were some things that didn't make sense and some things that really did make sense, and it was on a feeling level that things made sense, and it was my hip slick and cool stuff that didn't. I didn't want to leave when the meeting was over. And I remember telling Cindy that I didn't want to go back to the apartment, and feeling like I would, that I would never go back to the meeting if I went away. And she said, "You need to sleep." And I was like, "I can't sleep." I didn't sleep for weeks. But I did go back to meetings. I went every day. I started being able to hear. I didn't really even hear anything that night at that meeting. I remember the presence of a power greater than myself, which was you. And I remembered that something jived, something worked. And so I went back, and every day I went back. And on my 30th day, so actually that was October 20th of 87 that I went to my first meeting, and my clean day's not till November 21st. On my 30th day, my friend Laura, that was not in Narcotics Anonymous, called me and said that she had tickets to Pink Floyd concert, Seventh Row Center, and you just take those tickets. I did. And I took that hit. One hit came across my face and entered my body. And I don't know still that I even thought about it, that I even saw it, but I did it nonetheless. And what I really got was the meaning of powerlessness. I really got that I did not mean to take that first hit. I did not want to get high when I got there. I did not intend to go to that concert and get loaded, but I was loaded. And I had a head full of narcotics on. It was so bad. That was the worst hit off of anything I'd ever had. I was miserable, and I was very insistent and very problematic in the middle of the concert. I was screaming that I needed to borrow the car, and I needed to leave, and she didn't understand, and finally she threw the keys at me and said, "Just please go." I circled around Reunion Arena for the longest time listening to them play My Life. That concert was the Momentary Lapse of Reason concert tour. You know, stuff makes sense when you get here. It's good. I love that stuff that lines up. I went to the firehouse meeting and went in there screaming, "I love us at 30 days. We are just like on it." 30 days in a relapse, I walked into the firehouse meeting demanding a white tag because I got it. I got what the white tag really meant finally. And so I was like, "I just need one now." And they were just like, "We'll give you a tag when we're done." I was like, "No, I need it now." And I got my tag, and that's the tag I'm working off of today. So I get powerlessness over my addiction, and my life definitely is unmanageable with active addiction under my skin. So, yeehaw, I was on the road to recovery and had no idea what that meant at that time. After that relapse, though, I did understand what everybody meant by get a sponsor. So I got a sponsor. Her name was Sandy, and she was crazy as shit. And I needed her. I needed that. She had fun in recovery, and I could understand that. I could hang with that. I started working steps. I remember working my fifth step at the picnic table out in the middle of the park where I used to sleep. And I was so moved that I was working steps and talking about the past that I had, and I had a brand new day that day. I had a brand new life by the time I got to that fifth step. My first four step was one page of a notebook paper on the front, just one side. And I don't know. I don't know what everybody does. I don't do it that way today. I don't work my steps that way today. But I can tell you that doing something different works. That's what works for me. No matter what it is that's different, it works for me. And that one page of basically a very brief autobiography worked. It made me understand that I was taking action towards something different, some new way of life. Giving it away, telling somebody what my pain was, what I felt everybody had done wrong, and how I wasn't going to let it bother me, that was growth. That was huge growth for me. My sixth and seventh step, it's so funny how immature I was. I really stopped developing very early. My last grade complete was fifth grade, and I mean, fifth graders, they're young, they're children, and I was a child out there doing some pretty heavy-duty stuff, and I quit developing. So when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, it was the very tangible things I could understand. It wasn't the very in-depth idea. No conceptual things were getting through yet. My sixth and seventh step happened, you know, from being just rude at the 7-Eleven. I could not quit being rude at the 7-Eleven. I was bad, in fact, at 7-Elevens. It's like I just could not figure out how to become entirely ready and then beg to have my character defects removed, have my shortcomings removed. The last time I walked into a 7-Eleven and threw my fist down on the counter for cigarettes, I got that. I understood what was happening, and I needed to not walk into a 7-Eleven for a while. And so I didn't, and that was the best thing I could do at that time. My eighth step was not a real big deal. My ninth step, because everybody else was wrong, took me a long time. And I think that's, I don't think I'm unique in that. I think that a lot of times we think that there's a lot of messed up stuff, and that might be true. My understanding today is that ninth step is a gift to me. It allows me to let go and be accountable for my part. I love making amends. I don't have to make too many of them today. That's a motivator. I remember for a long time having the question asked to me over the phone, would you like to make amends for this action? And I was like, no. Okay. and like that, it was just a tangible exercise I had to learn in this just thinking process. I wasn't taught that. My 10th step, I was very diligent with my 10th step. I considering I'd never finished school, I felt like I was really smart to have a form and a paper and a notebook and all this stuff next to my bed and my basic text and all this stuff. And it felt so good to have that. And it was really a companion for me to have my step working stuff with me. My 10th step, I used the Living the Program pamphlet for a long time. I can say I absolutely, since I've been here, the 11th step is by far and large my favorite step. It offers me the most hope. It offers me the most freedom. I get that I'm powerless. It is the number one most important step, but it isn't my favorite step. My favorite step is the 11th step because it bridges my concept of a higher power from yesterday into today. And I need that. I have to continue growing. I cannot rely on what I did yesterday to keep me clean today or to keep me spiritually fit today. And that it says it verbatim that I seek to improve my conscious contact. And the 12th step is the grace of this program. My first service position was painting T-shirts at the White Rock dance every week. Every Friday night there was a dance out at the White Rock Lake community center, and I'd get up there and paint T-shirts, and they'd raffle them off after the dance, and then I got into activities really heavy, and then I did some H&I. I loved adolescent girls H&I. That was a huge part of my recovery at that time. That 12th step offers me purpose. I have had none before. Oh, okay, good. I don't know, being out there on the street, having nothing, knowing no one, feeling hopeless, only knowing how to do harm, create harm, finding a new way of life and being shown how to do that and then being able to offer it back, there's absolutely nothing more important in my world. I sponsor people today that I absolutely want to see recover. I want to watch them recover. And really what is so important to me is I want to be the person who recovers in front of them and can really reveal my humanity and not my talk. I want to be able to walk through today in just the way that I have possible. Maintain my humanity with dignity. Gosh, how I find gratitude in all that is that I truly do care. And I love to give it away. I love Narcotics Anonymous. It is my family. It's the first year that I've not been around my blood family for this day, a few days. And I don't miss them. I don't miss them. I love them. But my day has been filled with love. And so I don't miss love today. Being of service is the most giving thing I do. My girls are grown and gone, and I feel like a completely different person today than I was November 21st of 87. I've passed a lot of beliefs that I used to hold. I no longer hold those beliefs. I created new ones. I used to say that I had adopted. I had signed my name and adopted belief systems that I didn't even know what I had read, if that makes sense. It's like, I just kept signing my name. Okay, yeah, I'll believe that. Yeah, I'll believe that. Yeah, I'll believe that. And I didn't know what I believed, and I didn't know who handed me the paper, and I didn't know why I signed it. So I started looking at those things, and I feel real comfortable with a lot of my belief systems. I think I feel done. Thank you so much for being my family and allowing me to be of service. I heard a girl share when I was a GSR for my home group. I'm not done. I just got on a whole new thing. Okay, go. When I was a GSR for my home group, I got impeached. It was a very fine moment. And it's because I enforced my strong will. It was a great day. And we had voted to lock the doors regardless of what the group conscience had said. We were the trusted servants. We held a private, secret group conscience, and we voted to lock the doors anyway. We weren't having a 24-hour little supposed recovery house. So I got impeached. And what was so fabulous about that day is what I got is that if I want what you have to offer and I'm willing to make the effort to get it, then I'm ready to take certain steps. And what I got is I just had stepped outside of what you had to offer me. I just stepped right over that to outside of it. And I became unwilling. And I was so excited. I was just like, woo, I get that. I'm stepping right back in. I'll be of service some other way because I am not a good GSR. I have power issues bad. I'm not a GSR of anything. And I haven't ever been again on purpose. Now I've forgotten my great little thing that I was on. So being of service, GSR, service work, I don't know. I am so grateful. Tuesday when I got my key tag, it was a gratitude meeting, and I really heard something brand new for myself. I've never heard the gratitude prayer quite so personally ever before that night. And what I got is that I've said for a long time that I feel like I can never express how much I thank you, how much all this is for me. And the gratitude prayer says that it speaks. My gratitude speaks when I just care, and I do, and I share. I am this way, this in a way. That's what I do. That's all I know how to do. And so I get to start learning how to be satisfied with that truth. Just that truth. Not trying to understand anything or trying to be, louder or more popular or anything. I don't have to do it right. I just have to care and I share with others, with you, this way. Not my way, this way. I'm growing a lot. This was my thing. So I just moved to Phoenix. I just moved to Phoenix this summer, and I've spent 10 years coming down to Phoenix for my recovery. And on purpose, I come down here to facilitate my growth and my fellowship. My sponsor has loved me and been so attentive to who I am in that. And then I graduated and got a job, and it's in Madison School District, and I was like, I'm going to Phoenix. And everything lined up about that. Every single thing lined up about that. And part of my gratitude is that I sit in this little house and I go to work and I'm in a meeting every single night and I'm living the program again. I'm like living it. And I missed it. I moved from Dallas in 96, and oh God, it was good to be where I was for a while, but I am glad to not be there today. I went through a lot in this last 10 years. And wow, that's interesting. So November 21st of 96, I celebrated my 9 years, and that's pretty cool. And this last Tuesday, I celebrated my 19 years down here. I feel like I've finally gotten home to you. And it took a long-ass time. 10 years is a long time to want to go to a meeting and not have the fellowship that I knew. For 9 years, I knew who you were to me, and I knew what you meant to me, and then I had to not. And it was whatever my God's will for me was, and I prayed for the power to carry it out, and I did. And I get so absolutely obnoxiously happy about being here. I'm terrible in the morning. I call so many people, and I'm out of my mind happy, and I'm growing a lot. A lot of things have changed, and I feel real vulnerable with the people in the fellowship here. It's funny to be known and not feel known. And that's just because I'm vulnerable. I'm brand new in a whole fellowship. And thank you for loving me. Jeff T., thank you for calling me. You call me early in the morning. That's nice. It's my last teenage year in Narcotics Anonymous. Woohoo! Gosh, it is good to be clean. Thank you so much.